When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. It's Jessica Natale Woolard from Victoria, British Columbia, Canada. It's been a while since I've been on the podcast, and I am so glad to be back with you. I'm really excited about our next guest, too. You may remember her from a previous TBiz podcast episode back in 2022. Our guest is Christine Folch, and she is an associate professor of cultural anthropology at Duke University in North Carolina. Last time she was on the show with me, we had a great conversation about three tea-like beverages of the Ilex or Holly genus. Those three drinks are called Yopan, Wayusa, and Yerba Mate. I have to be honest that interview with Christine was one of my favorites that I've done on the TBiz podcast. I loved it because of the history and the cultural components that we talked about, and I find myself referring to it quite a lot in conversation when people are asking about tea. I often say, did you know there are other tea-like beverages that are from this side of the world, North and South America? If you want to listen again to that episode or maybe hear it for the first time, you can go to the TBiz website, tea-biz.com, and search Ilex, I-L-E-X. That should bring up the article and the original segment. So I mentioned that what I loved about that conversation was the history of the beverages. I also liked hearing her argument about why two of those three beverages, Yopan and Wayusa, never managed to compete on the world stage with coffee and tea during those first few centuries of colonial America. Yerba mate was different. It is the most well-known of the three Ilex beverages, and as you're going to hear from Christine soon, it did become widely popular, just not everywhere, and it did not reach where I am in Canada, for example. But yerba mate is what we're here to talk with Christine about today. She has a brand new book coming out, The Book of Yerba Mate, A Stimulating History. I do love that subtitle, stimulating, because of course it's a caffeinated beverage. The book will be published by Princeton University Press and released on September 10th. I did have a look on Amazon, and you can pre-order it if you're as keen to read it as I am. As tea lovers, you are likely familiar with yerba mate. In the last decade or so, I would say, I've seen it appear on canned drinks on grocery store shelves. I think they're usually with organic or caffeinated or energy beverages. If you've ever tried it, though, you know that it's typically enjoyed in a gourd or a mug, the traditional way that is, and you sip it through what is called a bombilla, which is a straw that has a strainer on the bottom. So the leaves are loose in the receptacle, the gourd or the mug. In looking through Christine's book, I was fortunate to get a sneak peek of the book. I was surprised to learn that yerba mate is still considered the world's third most popular naturally stimulating beverage. It is very good at delivering that jolt of caffeine in the morning that many of us need to kickstart our day, I think. So now, the mate's in the gourd. The leaves have been steeped. It's time to welcome Christine. Welcome, Christine Folch from Duke University, here to chat with us about her forthcoming book on yerba mate.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so excited to have you back, and I want to congratulate you on the upcoming book. That's really exciting, and I feel lucky that we're getting a sneak peek into it.
I'm really glad to talk about this, so thank you for having me.
So we chatted back in 2022, and in that conversation, we discussed your research into all three Ilix beverages, Yopan, Guayusa, and yerba mate. What led you to focus on mate in this work? And can readers expect, you know, Yopan and Guayusa to get an honorable mention or maybe a sequel?
So Yopan and Guayusa absolutely show up in the book. They show up early in the story and then they show up at the end. But what I loved about making this book, about doing this research, is that this book is a passion project. It comes out of the love that I have for Latin American cuisine and how important I think food is to telling both really personal, intimate stories and then global stories of trade and empire and colonialism and science and capitalism, all of these big, big words. I think food does both of these moves. I started researching yerba mate decades ago, and yerba mate took me to Yopan and Guayusa. And so I think it's really hard to tell the story of yerba mate without them. I think one of the things that's lovely is how stories about the things that we consume surprise us.
Fabulous. And a passion project. So when did the seed get planted for this book?
So there are multiple seeds that have been planted for this book. If you had talked to me maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I would have told you that this book started as a response to the beverage yerba mate and my surprise about yerba mate. So I was in like the early 2000s living in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and a friend of mine came back from a trip from South America. She was in Chile, and she brought back the iconic gourd, the drinking straw bombilla, and a package of dried mate, like a kilo. And I was so intrigued by this thing that I didn't know anything about because it's from the southern part of South America and my family's from the Caribbean. And so I thought we had nothing to do with it. And so that piqued my interest. A few years later, I was in Lebanon traveling and saw people drinking it in the same way there. And by that point, my interest was hooked. I got to know people from Argentina who were drinking it. And so I thought that this was the story of my interest, that it was me kind of getting to know communities across the world that were consuming this beverage. And I thought that was how the book started, and how the research started. How does this beverage go from one place to another place? And why don't we drink it more commonly here in North America? That's how I thought the story started. And then as I was researching it, I realized I have, you know, yerba mate took me home. My experience of yerba mate in my 20s was not my first experience with it. Cuban Americans have been making a yerba mate soda since before they were Cuban Americans, since they were in Cuba. In the 1920s, a company in Cuba started making a carbonated beverage called materva, with, you know, yerba mate and like tons of sugar. It's very sweet. And this beverage followed Cubans in exile to Miami. And so my mom is from Cuba. And so my grandfather used to drink this stuff with us. I know children shouldn't drink caffeine. Okay. But, or lots of sugar, but, you know, grandparents are indulgent. And so we used to drink it with him when we were a kid. And so this is how the story actually starts without me even realizing it.
And so at first, when you tried yerba mate for the first time, that was, you know, a personal experience. At what point did it become a professional or academic pursuit?
I think pretty quickly after I moved to New York to start graduate studies. While I was doing my PhD in cultural anthropology, I found myself gravitating to some themes that I'm regularly interested in. And one of the themes that I'm regularly interested in is cuisine and food and how you can read culture in recipes and how recipes hold art in everyday life, but how recipes also are these stories about very large global processes. Like capitalism, like colonialism. And so I was reading other people writing about other foodstuffs. And I was like, well, what about yerba mate? Why aren't people writing an analysis of how this drink gets from South America to parts of the Middle East, but it's not commonly consumed in North America? Why is that? And so my interest was piqued because the history of mate is the history of the last 500 years in the Americas. And it's a history of the transformation of countries, of the rise and fall of empires, European empires. It's the story of cultural contact and violence. It's the story of immigrants and migrants going and searching for a better life and adopting new practices. This is what the Syrians, the Lebanese did when they came to South America and, you know, into Argentina and Uruguay and Brazil and Paraguay in the late 19th century, early 20th century. I mean, they went all over South America, but specifically in the mate drinking places, picked up a habit in the early 20th century and returned back to the Levant, carrying with them mate.
Thank you. For our listeners, a reminder that Christine is an assistant professor of cultural anthropology at Duke University. And so this book, you can be sure, is very well researched and has tons of amazing information and bringing archival and historical artifacts to life through this work. I love that you're talking about all the ways that mate has touched history, because in a way that is what drew me to be interested in tea at the beginning too. The story of tea and its travels through the world and then how it becomes related to culture and business and horticulture. And I find that fascinating. In the notes that I was looking at about the book, you also mentioned that yerba mate inspired the world's first written tango. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So one of the things that's really fun about food is that, as we all know, it's never only just about food. And so mate is such an iconic beverage for South America that it helps us think about other parts of popular culture. So the tango, it's a dance and a musical form that is an amalgamation, right? It uses Afro-Uruguayan, Afro-Argentine beats and rhythms, and then gets layered on with more kind of European harmonics. And so, you know, tonal forms, this musical form that arises in the cities of Montevideo and Buenos Aires in the Rio de la Plata, so the River Plate, in these port contexts of contact. You get this musical form and the first written tango. So the lyrics that we've got for it are che, toma mate, which means like, you know, drink mate. Hey, you drink mate. But it's also kind of an expression that means, it colloquially means like, you know, so this is the way life is, right? And it's written by a Spaniard who is an immigrant to Argentina. So what this means is the song itself is, you know, it's such an iconic beverage that an immigrant who at that point would have been coming from a culture that drank coffee came down and wrote a song about a different beverage as his way of connecting to where he was. And so I just love that there's so, you know, there are these things that we consume that become not just, you know, a morning pick-me-up, but become part of the fabric of how we narrate our lives. That's what mate does for South America and also for certain parts of the Middle East. The mate itself, the gourd and the bombilla drinking straw, come to stand in for a whole culture.
Wow. And what is that trajectory of mate from South America to the Middle East?
The largest market for yerba mate outside of outside of what we call the Southern Cone. So the Southern Cone would be like the bottom part of South America. So it'd be like Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, the southern part of Brazil, Chile as well. The largest market is Syria. So Syrians picked up a yerba mate habit in the late 19th, early 20th century when we had waves of people coming from the Levant, Syrians and Lebanese. And you had waves of migrants coming in the late 19th century. The Levantine, Syrian, Lebanese migrants pick up mate as something to drink and something to consume. And like it so much that when they go back home to visit relatives or to marry or to live as their elderly, they take it back with them and it becomes a really important beverage in Syria and Lebanon today.
Fascinating. Thank you. In our talk a few years ago, we discussed how one of the other Elix beverages, Yopan, had a marketing problem, or let's call it a racism problem. It was being consumed by the people that American colonizers perceived to be the wrong people. They were indigenous people. Now, did your research for this book uncover more information about why yerba mate failed to be commodified like tea and coffee?
Well, so yerba mate was commodified like tea and coffee, right? So that's part of the story. Yeah, like it's a major global beverage. It's not consumed here, but it is a major commodity in South America. And so I think one of the questions is, thank you for asking this. So one of the questions is like, you know, how it is that certain like coffee and tea and then mate kind of get the footprint of fanatics that they do. One of the things I think is really interesting about this is, so when Europeans came into contact with yerba mate, they didn't have a caffeine habit.
Right.
And they didn't have a caffeine preference. So yerba mate has like basically a 100-year start. Head start from coffee and tea. But it doesn't make it in, it doesn't make it. And so then the question becomes, well, why? Well, this is because of the economic philosophy of the time. So this is one of my arguments, right? This is not like somebody else wrote this. I'm telling you what my interpretation of this is. So yerba mate becomes a commodity that is incredibly important and circulates all across the Spanish Empire. So it grows in a very particular part of the world. And instead, it becomes like the drink of all over South America. It makes it up to Mexico and it makes it to Spain. But the Spanish don't think, you know what I want to do? I want to get the French addicted to this too. You know what I want to do? I want to get the British addicted to this. Then we'll make bank. That's not the economic philosophy at the time. The economic philosophy of the time is mercantile capitalism, mercantilism, which has this idea that what we do is we don't do trade outside of our empire. So while it was this really important commodity inside the Spanish Empire, and remember, the Spanish Empire existed for over many more years than the British Empire, right? The Spanish Empire was the sort of first global European empire and the last one. So it's huge in terms of time. And then in terms of space, right? It includes like places like the Philippines. It touches on Japan, right? And then if we include Iberian Empire, so not just Spanish, then we're also bringing in like, you know, the Portuguese are in India, not just in, and obviously in Africa, not just in South America. So we've got the possibility of getting this whole like Iberian world kind of involved in this trade. And they're just not looking for French or for British consumers. And so that is, I think, why coffee and tea got the place that they did, because coffee and tea came, you know, through other kinds of marketing moves.
That is fascinating. Thank you. I have a background in communications and marketing, so I'm very fascinated by your research. And that's one of the reasons I was so looking forward to this conversation. But that is so interesting that they didn't want to look outside of the Spanish and Iberian Empire. So that's one of the reasons it didn't perhaps get further up north in North America or in other parts of the world. Thank you. I'm going to switch directions a little bit and ask about the ideal audience for the book of yerba mate. I think all of our listeners and it can see how well researched this is and how much you've looked into this. And so who is the audience for this book?
So the audience for this book is somebody who's smart and curious and not an academic and not a scholar. So the audience for this book is people who read cookbooks because they, not because they're going to cook everything in it, but because they're so curious about the world and so curious about food and imagining and thinking about food is a way that they travel and get to know the world. It's for the person who looks around and thinks, the world that I live in is really interesting and I want to know more about it. It's an academic book in the sense that it's researched, et cetera. And it's, you know, my job is that I'm a scholar, but I really tried to tell a story that smart, curious people of, you know, who are like, you know, who I'm imagining are beyond college age and want to pick something up and kind of get to know this thing that they're kind of starting to see everywhere. My dream would be to be able to walk into like, you know, a cafe and have it be like one of the books that are sold at cafes about the things that you consume in a cafe. That would be the dream.
I do love the way you're describing this about people who are interested in food and the stories they tell about our history of the world and different cultures. I think that's a great approach. And from what I gather, the ideal reader may or may not be the same as the modern drinker of mate. So who is drinking mate these days and how are they drinking it?
Yeah, so I mean, I hope that mate drinkers read it. I imagine that mate drinkers will, you know, I open with the recipe or the quote unquote right way to prepare yerba mate. And I'm sure people are going to be like, that's not how you do it. What you should do is you should make sure that the water is at X temperature, et cetera, et cetera. But I also really hope that this is for people who are like, you know, who maybe have a coffee machine at home and care about their coffee, but also want to know like about this other thing that they see and they want to know kind of the story of it, or people who have traveled to South America and seen mate and are curious, their interest is piqued. So I'm hoping those people are moved to purchase. And I think that, you know, the question that you're asking about how people are consuming it today is that, you know, yerba mate is, like I said, it's old, right? So it's pre-colonial. It's been in use by indigenous communities since time immemorial. It has now moved beyond these more traditional communities in a different form. And that different form is as a ready-to-drink, canned or bottled beverage.
Yes, I have seen that quite a lot in stores these days.
So I know that you're seeing this kind of everywhere. That what these companies realized is that people are not going to take up the gourd and the straw and sort of the large ritualistic ceremony around it. That's a steep learning curve, unless you're really highly motivated. But people in North America, boy, do we love, you know, opening cans of oats or unscrewing bottle tops. Like we are super down with something like that. And so if you put it in a new form, you can get to a new public. So there's been this uptake of people who are super interested in, you know, trying new kinds of stimulating beverages.
And I do recall that the Argentine national football team has shared
mate. Yeah. This is their special sauce that helps them win. And it's part of them underscoring to themselves and to their fans who they are. It's also super yummy.
I had a friend recently come and stay with me, and as a gift, I was sent some mate.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's such a delight. So this friend will be receiving your book as a thank you for the gift that he sent me.
Oh, that's wonderful.
For the last question, I'd like you to think about your future reader. So let's pretend it's 6 months after they finish the book and mate comes up in a conversation with friends. What do you hope that they say?
Whatever they say next kind of takes the story further in the conversation.
actually, did you know that it's not just yerba mate, but we actually have a beverage that's kind of like it here in the United States? No. Yes. And it grows all over the U.S. South. And actually, people are selling it again, but it was so popular that John Locke, yes, John Locke, do you remember? Remember we studied him in high school? Yes. Wanted to import it. I was just taking a trip to Lebanon and I saw it everywhere. And, you know, this is kind of the thing I would like people to say. They would make connections between the conversation they're having and mate.
I'd say it's already working in the case of my friend who was telling me about how much he likes mate. I described Yopan and explained what I had learned from you. So I'm excited to hear about further connections that are made as the book gets released in September.
Thank you.
Any final words for our listeners?
You know, bottoms up. It's really, I can't wait to hear what people think about it. And that I do want to say this. I don't think there is one right way to drink it. And so there are different kinds of products and different kinds of flavors. And some people want it really bitter and some people want it really sweet. And I don't think there's one right way. I think we can incorporate these recipes in our lives and give them our own meanings. And that is really special.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for being back on the show, Christine. I meant it when I said that I was really excited to speak with you and hear about the book.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/try.